Why is he so special to St. Bonaventure?
Well, he's very special to St. Bonaventure, Eileen, because he spent a little under 2 years here between his graduation from Columbia and his entrance into the Trappist Monastery of Gethsemane in Louisville, Kentucky. And while he was here, we have come to understand that he was deeply impressed by the intellectual and spiritual depth of several of the friar scholars here, as well as the simple fact of teaching and learning to love the art of teaching and the variety of his students and life on a college campus back in a day when it was perhaps more bucolic than it is now.
What have you learned about some of the connections he made while in Olean at the school and the campus?
Well, one of the exciting connections here in Olean is the family of Phyllis and Dick Marcus and Marcia and Jack Kelly. The Marcus family was a family of the Jewish community here in Olean, and Bob Black, a member of that family and later internationally recognized poet, was Merton's college companion at Columbia. So Merton, who had no family in the United States, came often to Olean on holiday breaks, would spend time up in the hills above Olean, you know, on summer breaks writing poetry and writing novels and drinking beer and hanging out with his college chums. And so he formed deep friendships here, which over the years he often referred to in his letters and his journals.
And, of course, one of his books reflects on his time at St. Bonaventure University, an autobiography?
That is correct. In The Seven-Story Mountain, he very clearly describes the emotional turmoil he experienced as a young man who felt called to the religious life, to a very strong and, we might say, ascetical form of religious life among the Trappists. But he was being discouraged by many from pursuing that call because he was a convert. And as we learned later, he had quite a risque college youth, both here and abroad. And so people thought he was perhaps running away from some of the problems of young adulthood. And so he went through a lot of turmoil here, but it was the Franciscan friars here, particularly a German friar named Philotheus Behner, who really helped him to sort all of that out and to have confidence that he could try this path, which he eventually did and, of course, became a world-famous voice around, you know, spiritual growth.
And using his Catholic voice as a Trappist monk and leading those ways in civil rights, and I'm reading anti-war, he really helped create those dialogues in a very spiritual and peaceful way.
Exactly. In the early years of his time as a monk, his focus was very inward to life within the Catholic Church and the richness of its rituals and its sacraments and its devotions. But as he matured, that belief in God's providence for the world really made him turn outward to look at the horrors of war, the deep evils being inflicted in our society by segregation. And thus he became very controversial in the last years of his life, to the point where there are people who to this day believe he was murdered, that his death was not an accident.
And what about the fact that they talked that he would have never become a Franciscan friar?
Well, actually, that stems from the fact that while he was still living in New York City, he went to the friars and he applied. And he was eventually discouraged by the friar in charge of the young applicants. But what one of our own friar scholars, Father Dan Horan, has been able to discover is he wasn't discouraged because he wasn't worthy material or the friars were being selective in their process. They just realized he was young and he needed to get more experience in his life as a lay Catholic man before entering religious life and taking its vows. So that delay caused him a lot of heartache. But eventually, the friars working most closely with him realized his call really was to the Trappist monastic life. And the friar's life is very different. It's very engaged in society and social concern and parish work and college work. And he had a different path to go, and the friars recognized, and he went with their help and with their blessing.
Sister, do you see somewhat of a correlation to our current Pope Francis in some ways with Merton?
I think that Pope Francis and Merton would have been great friends, because Pope Francis is really a radical spirit. He is not afraid to challenge, existing sort of orthodoxies of practice and of posture. And at the same time, he recognizes that he stands in an ancient religious tradition that you don't simply plow under its doctrines and its teachings, but you open up different ways to look at them. And I think Merton was doing a lot of that, particularly in his later years, in relationship to what does contemplation bring to bear on questions of social justice? What does prayer have to do with engagement in protest and policy changes? And so I think the Pope and Merton would have made great friends had they been able to know each other.
Now, you mentioned his death. It was in 1968.
Yes.
Next January, he would have been turning 100 years old.
That's right.
And that is part of your centennial celebration.
Right. Yes, celebrating his birthday.
Overlooking the campus, it's called Merton's Heart.
Correct.
What is that?
Well, it's actually a clearing, a pasture that was carved out on a hill that faces our campus. And it is actually somewhat heart-shaped. And Merton used to love to hike in the hills around here. And over time, a bit of a legend has grown up that he went up onto that hill, and that's where he would go to think his thoughts and say his prayers. But we don't actually have proof of that. But because it is true that he loved to go hiking in the mountains, that place has been dubbed Merton's Heart. And frankly, it's a beautiful view from our campus quad, and our people love to reference it. And I think it gives a sense of the enduring spirit of Thomas Merton on this campus, a desire for intellectual growth combined with a real attention to spiritual development.
Sister, how can the public take part in your 3-day celebration in June?
Well, everybody's welcome. If people would like to go to our website, they can Google in Thomas Merton at St. Bonaventure University. And the program is actually intended not for academic scholars, but for any person interested in learning more about Merton, exploring what kind of a spiritual seeker he was, what kind of a prophetic religious voice he was in terms of social issues. And we have a marvelous group of speakers, Michael Higgins, who is the director of the International Merton Society, Dom John Hughes Bamberger, the former abbot of the Genesee Monastery up near Rochester, Father Dan Horan, our own Father Dan Riley, Brother Ed Coghlan, Buffalo native. And so we think we've got a wonderful cast of speakers that people will enjoy, and a lot of activity. We're taking people up to the mountains to experience Merton's Heart, and we've got a fabulous collection of Merton letters and manuscripts in our library. So there'll be lots of things to do in addition to encountering some excellent input.
Well, Sister Margaret Carney, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this celebration of Thomas Merton coming up in June. We appreciate it.
And Eileen, I'm grateful for the opportunity to share the news. Thank you very much.